Be part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? It is already September. Today is the 2nd, in fact, of September 2024. And we are about October, November, 3 months away from the end of the year 2024. I know that a lot of people had what do you call those things, resolutions or thereabouts, and there was a tagline to 2024. I hope that your dreams and whatever it is that you wanted to achieve this year has been achieved. If not, you are not late. As they say, you are never too late. So you still have about 3 months to make sure that you still go after your dreams. But anyways, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It is the Monday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. Every Monday, we do this thing called personal finance. And today is no different at all. We're talking about a very interesting topic today, the role of money. Archetypes in influencing financial planning behavior. Now, let me repeat that in case you didn't get that. We're talking about the role of money archetypes in influencing financial planning behavior. If there's one thing we do very well right here on Business Sense, we plug you. Is that the correct way? I think it is. We plug you, right? And I think after today's conversation, especially if you know who my guest is, you're going to go out with a lot of gems today. As individuals, we all have unique perspectives and especially approaches to how we manage our finances. However, there are patterns in our behavior that can be classified into different money archetypes. Vangile Makwakwa, author of What's Your Money Personality? And no stranger to this particular show, joins us to share a little bit more about these money archetypes and how they influence our relationship with money. Okay, I know where we are going, and she's joining us this evening to talk to us. Ma'am, good evening, and welcome to the show once again.
Oh, thank you for having me once again, Tafela. Yes. I'm happy to be on the show.
No, the excitement is with me because I look forward to this conversation, and I really love talking to you. So thank you so much. We really appreciate you once again for making that time. How's the day so far?
The day has been good so far. I'm in Cape Town, so it looks like hopefully spring has sprung.
Yeah.
It's been a hectic winter for us.
I have a godly jealous against you. Every time I talk to you, we like touching on Cape Town. And we all know that Cape Town is my favorite province, like favorite place to be. Like, when is God going to answer my prayers, Evangelia? Like, when is he going to do that?
Because, maybe you should just move. Take the leap and just move.
Nah, yeah, you know what? Maybe that's what I should do, eh? Yeah, maybe I should try that. But I love Cape Town. I really love Cape Town. And I was looking at your videos on Facebook the other day. You're posting. I don't know where you were in Cape Town, but there was the sea, the beach or something like that. And you're in some warm baths or something like that.
Oh, yes, that was in Wellington.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't the beach so much, but the views were gorgeous, and there were like little dams, and
I
just
know,
like,
right?
Oh my gosh, it's stunning.
You're fortunate. You know, people in your place in Western Cape, you guys are just... You are blessed. So I envy you in a godly way. But thank you so much for joining us, ma'am. We really appreciate your time.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You are an author. Let's start there for people who may not have known or were not part of the other conversation that we had. Tell us a little bit about yourself and particularly the book.
Well, I'm a money trauma coach, and the book this is my second book that is
Yes.
published by a publisher,
Yes.
and it is called, this one's published by Penn Macmillan.
Okay.
So it's called What's Your Money Personality? Changing the Way That Black Families Manage Their Finances.
Sure.
In this book, I'm looking at our trauma responses around money and then creating archetypes and describing how each of the archetypes in our families would respond to money based on their trauma responses. So often when people read the book, they say it's like I'm sitting at their in their family and like watching their family dynamics. And that was my entire mission with this book, was for people to see themselves in a personal finance book, especially Black people, to see themselves in a personal finance book and say, wow, I now understand what is happening within my family when it comes to money and with me when it comes to money, right? Why do I behave this way? Because for us, money is very much a collective effort. It's not individual, but we keep being told, we're being taught personal finance from a Western standpoint, which says that money is individual, all these things. And then we wonder, why can't we set boundaries in the way that we're told to set boundaries? Why can't I just say no? All those things. And why am I in debt? And why do I allow other people to get me into debt? Well, because it's a very, very different discussion for us, especially for people of color, you know? So it's not the same. And I think that's really, really important to start having a discussion about that, to say how I plan for retirement isn't going to be the same as, say, someone who is westernized white and plans for retirement, because I'm going to be thinking of my aunt, my uncles, my mom, my dad. Like, and I'm not just going to be talking to myself about this. I'm talking to my siblings and all of that. And it becomes a real, real family discussion, you know?
Sure. And it's taboo, right? Sis Vangile, especially the topic about money. And I can just reference my own life, right? And I don't blame my parents per se, but I realized that they were, I suppose, living at a very difficult time, didn't have access to things that we have access to. Apartheid did them a number or two, if you want. But these money conversations were not easy conversations.
I think they're not very, very easy conversations, mainly because a lot of time money is a very triggering
It
subject,
is,
right?
it
And for
is.
some of us, we have witnessed how money within a family, let's say that you grew up with just a single mom and they had to negotiate money with like the other parent, how it could sometimes become this very heated topic that led to stress. Or even when maybe you grew up with a family member that was the breadwinner, what that felt like if everyone lived within the same household or close together in the same neighborhood, and one person had to look after everybody else, the kind of stress that was like exhibited whenever, and was also experienced whenever money and the conversation of money had to come up, right? So it can feel very scary to have a conversation with money, because most of us actually tend to associate money with either verbal violence, emotional or physical violence, or all three. So we feel very unsafe broaching the topic of money. So it's about learning how do we get to a point where within our nervous systems we're feeling regulated enough and calm enough to be able to talk about money from a very calm standpoint.
Ooh, did I just hear you say that some of us, when we talk about mind, something happens in our stomach, in our nervous system, that just doesn't like this topic? Oh my goodness.
That is true, right?
Oh
Like when you're
my.
like, yeah, think about it, when people even have to ask for promotions, or when, let's say, you're an
That's not
entrepreneur
easy one, eh?
and you have to talk about your pricing. Yeah, I have clients who will start talking about the weather. I'm like, your client, the other person asked you about prices. Why did you talk about the weather? Because they're so scared to mention their pricing.
That's very true. In fact, I'm having goosebumps in my stomach right now as we talk about this. And I realize maybe now I might suffer from this thing, you know, that when you talk about when something happens. And I think it's an interesting one because I don't think we even notice these things, that our stomach suddenly gets entangled and you are feeling uneasy. Like you said, all of a sudden the weather is hot and you talk about the water self going straight to, I need money. That's what I need. That's why we've got people like you. So we really, really appreciate people like you to help. We have trauma of these things. Oh my goodness.
But I mean, I don't know if anyone has experienced it as a child.
Yeah.
When you knew you needed to ask money from your parents.
Yeah.
I would spend hours like priming myself in my teens, giving myself a pep talk. Okay, this is how you're going to explain it to them. This is what you need money for. Because you know that if you say, oh, I need money because we're going to the movies with my friends and then afterwards we're going to get dinner, you'll never hear the end of it, never. You know? So you have to like prime yourself. But then I started to realize that as an adult, I was doing the exact same thing when it came to any conversations about money, because that's how I had been trained by my caregivers to approach money conversations or anything that involved asking for money, you know. And as an entrepreneur, that was so stressful, like having to spend 2 days talking to myself just to ask clients, either corporate clients or individual clients that I've done work with, to pay me. Because what I was used to was, if you ask for money, people go and give you stories and they shout and they scream. Yeah. And then you'll eventually maybe get the money, or maybe you'll be told to go focus on your school books, that maybe you'll be doing a little better if maybe you put as much attention on school as you did on movies and friends, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's get right into it then. Archetypes. What are we talking about when we are talking about money archetypes? And as you talk about that also, how do they influence our habits? Are these things separate, not the same, archetypes and habits? What are we talking about here?
Okay, so the first thing to say is there are many, many different money archetypes.
Okay.
I've just created 10 new archetypes, right?
Yeah.
So an archetype is basically a symbol, a collective symbol that we can all recognize and understand without anyone telling us too much, right? So an example would be mother is an archetype, father is an archetype, or astrology signs. If someone says to you, I am Aries, all of us automatically know what that means, because that has been defined for us, and we already know, you're maybe short-tempered, you're quick to anger, all those things, right? So I think that's what an archetype is. Yes. So when we talk about money archetypes, it's the same kind of concept as in, like, it's a universal symbol that we can all recognize, that we can identify with when it comes to money, right?
Okay.
So I just created these 10, but people have created many, many different archetypes, right? Yeah. I mean, some people have created money archetypes of the saver, the spender, like the investor.
Yeah.
So there's different types, but I decided to create this to go deeper within our families, to explain how do we relate with money within our families, within our romantic relationships, within ourselves. And these are deeply tied to our trauma responses around money. So that's how my archetypes have evolved and come to be.
Okay. All right. And how do they then, I suppose, affect behavior?
Okay, so archetype, these particular archetypes, so I looked at, usually there are four main ways that we respond to trauma, right? Freeze, we either go into freeze mode.
Okay.
Let me actually start by explaining what trauma is, because some people are probably listening and they're like, oh, trauma is this big thing. I don't have any trauma, any money trauma.
Yeah.
Well, first, let me just say, trauma is are the big and small things that happen to us that are challenge that we do not know how to process. It's an event that happens too quickly or is too overwhelming for the nervous system to process, right? So What then happens is that it basically, those events then just live within the body, right? And instead of us processing that, those memories just keep staying there. That's why they say trauma lives in the body. And in an attempt to keep process, in an attempt to process them, we may find ourselves repeating certain patterns because the mind and the subconscious mind and the nervous system, whenever they experience something closely related to that event, they go back into those memories. And it's almost like they glitch. Like imagine it's like a computer that's trying to process. But every time it has to go through the full process, it gets to 50% and glitches and has to start all over again. Right? When you're trying to upload a new program. So that's what's happening with most of us. So trauma can be something like watching your mother count the bills every month, right? And she's and she's feeling uneasy. And as a child, you sense that unease. But because you're a child, you don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to process it. So it stays in your body, right? And it's happening every month. So what's happening is your nervous system is learning, this is how I should deal with money. So as an adult, you find yourself dealing in the same way with money and feeling like there's never enough, I can't pay the bills, all that. And you find yourself, no matter how educated, repeating your mother's cycles. So this is where the archetypes then help you explain how we, how our trauma response is, right? How did we then, if you are that child that was watching their mom, how are the ways that you would have responded to the trauma, right? So one way, and that's what's called a trauma response. So one way is to, you go into freeze mode, right? We all know what that is, when you're scared and you just freeze. That means, again, you don't process the full event. So the way that you would respond to trauma, to money trauma, and that's in that case, is that you kind of stay frozen in a particular space and time. The archetype that matches that particular trauma response is the eternal child. So the eternal child in this case is kind of like, think of the child, the grown up, could be 40, 50, 30. They never ever move out of the parents' home. They never ever quite manage their own finances. They never learn how to, they never ever get their own home. They never manage their own cars, all those things. And often the parents are doing everything for them, regardless of how old they are, right? Or the siblings or breadwinners have to take care of them. The second one is your, you can go into a fawn mode, right? People pleasing. So you see your mom dealing with this and you try to please her, make her feel better. You don't know what to do, but you're doing the most as a child. You're learning that to deal with trauma, you kind of please people, whoever is causing the trauma or the response. You try to basically make it go away by pleasing people, making jokes, making it just an easy situation. That is called the sweet one, right? So the sweet one archetype learned to deal with trauma, and in particularly money trauma, by pleasing everyone. So when they started working, they usually just got into debt for the family. So it's to kind of like deal with the pressure in the family and everything, they decided to help their caregivers by taking over so much of their responsibilities, right? And they then find themselves heavily in debt, but because of the family. So they they may have some savings, they will have retirement savings, but they will be heavily indebted, right? And they put a big facade up. Everybody thinks that they've got it together. They are the ultimate people pleasers. They're always so nice. You'll hear family members say, oh, they'll give you the shirt off their backs. So because of this, they also struggle to expand financially in terms of income. So they'll tend to stay in middle range, you know, and do just well enough. Then you've got those that go into fight mode, right? So they're observing all this drama with their mom, and they may start to scream and shout because they don't know how to process what they are feeling and sensing from their mother when it comes to the budgeting situation and everything. And so they learn to deal with trauma by going into fight mode. These are the destroyers. And you'll often see destroyers are often the black sheep of the family. They are the ones that, you know, when they being invited to a family funeral or a family wedding, anything can happen with them. It's just going to be some type of chaos, you know. And family members know that they're going to show up and they're going to cause a stir. So they are often in debt because they are the black sheep of the family. They haven't, they have no support system. So they often have this wound of not belonging and feeling like they have to do everything themselves. So they end up being heavily in debt. They live basically their own lives, but they do once in a while support the family, but they don't do black tax that heavily, mainly because people just don't want to deal with the drama from them, right? And when they are, and the way that they make money is through very innovative and creative means. You don't know what it is that they do, but it's out there. They are the artists, the healers, the this. They're not going to bug others to look after them because they've had to learn how to look after themselves. And they make money in very wildly creative and interesting and innovative ways. Then you've got those that went in, learned to deal with the trauma by going into flight mode. Right? So they would observe their mom doing the budget, feel the tension in the house, everything, and they would just run. They'd go off to the streets. They'd go with friends. They would just make sure that they're just not in the house. Mainly because, and they call the runaway archetypes, they feel too much in the body, so they don't know how to metabolize that trauma because it's overwhelming. So as adults, they are in debt because they have learned to run from whatever feels uncomfortable. They don't know how to sit with their bank accounts, get practical, and really look at what's going on because it's too scary. So they run from the bills, they run from the credit cards, they run from the debt collectors. When things get, and they struggle to build careers and they struggle to really increase income because when things get bad at work, they switch jobs. They don't really know the idea of building careers. When things get bad, if they're entrepreneurs, if the business doesn't do as well in the first year or within a particular time period, they close down, shut businesses, move on to the next one. So they learn to just leave whatever feels uncomfortable, right? Because they are in constant flight mode. They're just running. Then the final ones are the ones that like learned, this is the trauma response that I then introduced in the book, which is force mode, which is these ones are the kids that would see their parents dealing with all this and they decided to take control. Wow, I see mom struggling financially. I am going to get a second job and and help her with that. So we are going to work as a team and help each other, you know? And really, really from the from a very young age, they started to take control. If they were given pocket money, they always had pocket money left over. They always knew that they're going to take whatever pocket money they have and they will start buying sweets and selling and doing other things to supplement some cash in the house. As a child already, they were taking things, they were taking control of everything going on within the household, right? And so they started, so the way that they operate, even as adults, is when they experience any kind of stress or money trauma, they go straight into control. And for them, it's all about the I call them the fixer archetype. They're very, very few within the population. Fixers are able to literally take a family from poverty to higher class within a single lifetime, a single generation. They are those mavericks that we all know and read about, right? That they're like, I grew up in this particular situation in a tin house and like now I am here. You know, they create incredible things in a very short space of time. But at the cost, but they still are operating from the from a trauma point because most times as the breadwinners within the family, they're using money as a source of control, right? They're trying to control others and it can also wreak havoc on the family. So sometimes you'll find that the breadwinners are constantly at war with other family members and others definitely feel stifled by them and don't know, don't feel like they can never live their lives because the fixer is trying to run the show.
Yeah, Yeah. Okay. So, is there a way for one to learn which archetype they are? And I know it's probably in the book, right? But can yes. can one be able to detect, or we are just going through these things, I suppose, a bit of the fixer, a bit of the flight mode, a bit of, I suppose, the sweet one where we're trying to please everyone. Do we go through these different archetypes, I suppose, in between in our lifetime?
No, what most people say is that most people come to me and say we are all the archetypes, and yes. I always say very, very challenging to be all of them, because okay. some of them are like a complete polar opposites to each oh. other, and it's very, very challenging, you know? Oh. So you can, the beautiful part is that there are 10 archetypes. I've yeah. shared five.
Yeah.
So each of the five archetypes has a five golden archetypes, ooh, right? Okay, which are in the okay. book. So yeah. when you heal, you move into the golden archetype.
Ah.
But you can tend to have a predominant archetype and a primary archetype.
Yeah.
For example, my predominant archetype is the destroyer.
Yeah.
And then my secondary archetype, sorry, so primary and secondary archetype.
Yeah.
So my secondary archetype is the runaway archetype,
okay.
right?
Okay.
So if destroying, if going into fight mode for me doesn't work, then I go into straight runaway mode.
Yes.
I go into flight mode, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means that I will abdicate a situation and run.
Yeah.
You know, so if I fight it and it doesn't work, I go into flight mode.
Yes.
So most of us tend to have two primary archetypes and they basically tend to run the show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the beauty of this is because there's also the golden archetypes, we're not just like all in the shadow archetype.
Yes.
There are some things that are within our golden archetypes,
yes.
right?
Yes.
For example, if you're the destroyer, you can go in to be the renovator, which is your golden archetype. And that archetype is all about you now having evolved and you've learned that you don't have to fight everything that doesn't resonate with you. There are ways to, not everything has to be torn down and
yeah.
so that it could be rebuilt.
Yeah.
Some things can be renovated, right?
Yeah.
And then like, even within our money story, the renovator then finds ways to say, okay, I'm always going to be the black sheep of the
yes,
family
yes.
and within my workplace and within society, because
yeah.
the black sheep of the family is also considered odd, an
yes,
oddball by
yes.
society.
Yeah.
So how do you capitalize on that, right? And most renovators have given us the most incredible things. I talk about this in the book. They give us homeschooling. They give us new concepts around how to get married. They give us the language around activism.
Yeah.
They teach us new ways of things, because ultimately destroyers are mostly the activists that are saying, this is not working,
sure.
tear it all down.
Sure.
So then they give us new ways of dealing with the world and interpreting the world and really doing life, right? So we're not just either or. We can be multifaceted.
Yeah.
But ultimately, most of us, when we haven't gone on the healing journey with money, we tend to operate mainly
yeah.
from our shadow archetypes,
yeah.
which can be extremely because we're extremely dysregulated. So it can cause a lot of havoc in terms
yeah.
of our investments, savings, debt, and income, right? And the reason why it's important to know your archetype is that I've mentioned here about debt with all the archetypes, right? Why they would be in debt. Most of us will look at our friends and say, wow, the way that they're getting out of debt, those are the things that I need to do to be able
yeah.
to get out of debt.
Yeah.
Then we do those things. And how many of us have tried that and
I
it
know.
Doesn't work for
I
us?
Know. Yeah.
Because the root cause is not the same. Each archetype has a different root cause for why they are in debt. They are in debt, right? So, for example, a destroyer is going to be in debt because they have the root wound of not feeling like they belong. Whereas someone like the sweet one will be in debt because they have a not good enough wound and have this need to constantly people please, right? Those are completely different root causes.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be healing, if you're going to be changing your situation around money and debt, you need to understand what is driving your behavior around debt? What is the underlying trauma? Heal that, and then you start to heal the symptom. Yeah. All debt is is simply a symptom.
Yeah. Love it. So in other words, we are not stuck. We are, unless you go through the healing process, right, then you will remain stuck. But if you want to unstuck yourself, if there's such a word, but you'll have to go through that healing, journey, and then go to the better side, the much more better you when it comes to, I suppose, money and all that. Now, I want to ask then the fixer. You said there's a few of them in the population, right? Is it because you said they are creative, right, and innovative, if I heard you correctly, but they have a way of making money. Are they usually the ones that have money that now have to fix everyone?
No, the fixers are not necessarily creative. In fact, most of the way that we've been taught about money is from a fixer standpoint.
Okay.
You know? The fixers are the ones that are very, very logical. The destroyers tend to be the most creative. Destroyers and runaways do have more of that creative feel to them. But the fixers have definitely built our world because it's more logical. It's about needing control, right? So that things don't become chaotic. There's a few fixers because fixer, of all the archetypes, the fixer has the strongest energy.
Okay.
It requires a certain amount of energy, if you think about it, to take people, an entire family, from, say, completely a different class system to maybe taking them from a squatter camp all the way to the highest echelons or a penthouse in New York City.
Yeah.
Like, a fixer can do that in a lifetime, right? Not many of us have that capability.
Yeah.
And fixers have that strong energy also, mainly because to be a fixer, you almost have to have insane amounts of control over yourself so that you can also have control over situations and others.
Yeah.
They are and that's what makes them so challenging as characters, right?
Yeah.
They are extremely challenging characters.
So the one has to find a way to work with them. And I'm thinking about it from a relationship point of view, right? Like, these ones are logical, you know, there's a controlling of everything. And look, I think it's a good thing that they can take a family from one economic status to the next and all that. I think that's something to be celebrated about them. But I'm just thinking in a relationship, whether platonic or otherwise, you know, there's always a need to then say, How do we balance each other? Would you say then, as we draw towards the close, would you say there's a socio-economic condition element, I suppose, in all of this that can have an impact on where we may fall in the spectrum?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I feel like our archetypes are definitely determined by our socioeconomic issues, right? So, for example, it's interesting because I was having a conversation with a friend and she was asking me, do you think that in certain communities there would be more eternal children than in other communities?
Yeah,
and I said, yes, definitely, it would definitely be impacted. This would be impacted by the trauma that community has experienced. So if a trauma is so intensive, like apartheid, colonization, slavery, it can definitely bring a lot of us into freeze mode. So then you'd have a lot of eternal children giving birth. And like, the chances in the book, I explain this, that different archetypes give birth to certain archetypes. So I explain how that happens, and I give two or three different archetypes that could stem from a combination of certain archetypes coming together.
Yeah.
And so you're more likely to then have more eternal children, because why? Children, as a child, children don't know how to parent.
Yes,
now you've got, now you're giving birth to children, and you don't know how to parent as an eternal child. You don't have your finances together. You don't have your emotional stuff together. You don't have anything together. And now you want to parent the eternal child again. And then now you have to parent your own children. how do you parent? You're an eternal child. So chances are those children can also stay in child mode. And it can be like that for generations, which is also why you can find certain families, regardless of how educated they are, repeating financial patterns generation after generation after generation, because the root cause and the core wounds haven't been healed. You know, we're thinking that the solution is more education, but that's a very logical solution to a very emotional problem, and a problem that is also very physiological in terms of trauma, you know, and also deeply ancestral, because now we're talking, as I've just explained, intergenerational. So there needs to be some kind of intergenerational healing as well, and understanding of why do I behave the way that I do? Why is it that I am parenting like this? How have I been parented? How have my parents been parented so that they parent me like this? Where does this come from? And often it's socio-economical, almost always.
That's what I'm saying. When we started that, I think apartheid has done us a number, particularly, you know, the Black generation, the Black people, because it has instilled trauma in us in a socioeconomic manner that is very, very deep, right? And it's so deep that it goes into generations. And like I'm saying, people like yourselves are really important so that, you know, we can heal, we can find a way out of these things. Because unless we do that, then it will be intergenerational. I suppose we can't then lift ourselves out of poverty until we go through this healing journey and we know, okay, this is money. We are comfortable about money as a family. And we can then talk about, okay, how can we creatively come up with ways based on each person's strong personality or archetype when it comes to money? You might find that maybe the dad in the house has a strong you know, logical thinking about money and can fix things, or the mother has that, okay, so you look after our investments, you know, because then you would have a logical way and non-emotive way, I suppose, around money. For some of us who are people pleasers, who say, okay, nah, don't give me money because I'm a people pleaser. Anyone who asks me for a one rand, I'm going to give them. And so that will make problems for our investment. So that type of thing, is that where we need to get to, I suppose, as families?
And I explain this in the book, right? So in the book, I deeply touch on, like, I have an entire chapter just on apartheid, forced removals, explaining how that has impacted us and like just what happened to the Black family and how that gave birth to the archetypes. But in chapter 18 of the book, I interview my dad and his family. They started a family Lehotla in 1984.
Nice.
And yeah, and it's still going. So how they then decided that, you know what, we are going to, in terms of funerals being very, very pricey, how do we make sure that as a family we start to build savings and reserves and start to look after each other and bury our own without really having to ask the one that makes the most money for money, not having to call each other every time. Oh my God, this has happened. So I think 80 extended families on my dad's side have come together for since 1984. For 40 years, and they just put money in every month. Yeah. And it's managed pretty much like, you know, a funeral policy, I guess. Yeah. You have tier one. Yes. They explain, they've got, in the book, he explains tier A, B, C. I think that's what they use. Yes. And then based on that, that's what you're contributing every month, except December and January, because they've got kids stuff.
Yeah.
And that means that whenever something important happens, like a wedding, a funeral, big things, you don't ask us. Nobody has ever had to ask us, this current generation, or call us. Like my cousins and I and my siblings, we don't know that, where people call us and say, hey, this has happened, because they go to the Lehotla, they talk, and then they withdraw from there.
Sure.
Right? And that was one way to basically solve the issue of Black tax. And then also choosing leaders from within that, and then mentoring the younger generation. So younger men are brought in and then they are mentored as to how to, for careers, if they want to go into being medical doctors, there's someone within those 80 families that is doing that. And then they asked, can you please shadow this person? Can you teach them? Can you make sure that they get placement somewhere? Sure. Like, can you at least teach them a way of thinking what they should do? So you're not starting from scratch, because generational wealth is also knowledge that is passed on from one generation to the next. And I think what apartheid did to us was that it basically cut that cord between that passing of knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Because we are so scattered all over that we don't really know who we are often, and we don't know who to turn to when things are bleak, right? So that is also needed. It's not just about money. It's about how things are done within a family.
Sure. It sounds like you're from the royal family. But anyways, that's just me listening to you, right? Because that's how royal families normally operate, right? They've got their own ways of doing things. But anyways, without revealing too much there, how do we bring this one home? Talking about the money archetypes and how they, I suppose, influence our financial planning behavior. How do we sum it up? What would be your 10 seconds?
I would say understanding yourself. That is the key. Understanding what drives your financial behavior will help you understand what behavioral patterns are keeping you in a particular financial loop. And once you identify those, then you can start making different moves financially.
Sure. Understanding yourself. Thank you so much, ma'am. I think we've shared quite a bit. And where can people get the book?
You can get it at Exclusive Books, Take a Lot, Amazon. You can get the ebook on any of the ebook platforms.
Ah, okay. That's lovely. That's lovely. I should pick up one for myself.
Yes, awesome.
Yes. But thank you so much, ma'am. Really appreciate your time. And may God continue to bless you and your work.
Oh, thank you so much, Tafelo. Have a blessed Sunday.
Have a good one. That is, of course, Vangile Makwakwa talking to us this evening, telling us a little bit about, you know, this thing called money archetypes and how they influence our financial planning behavior. I have been schooled, and I hope that you have learned and picked up a few things for yourself. And I hope that you can go and get the book so that you can get a clearer understanding of what is your money archetype. Are you a people pleaser, for example, or are you the fixer? Or are you the one that gets into flight mode when we talk about money? Or are you the one that fights? Yes, people who fight when we talk about money. Kunzima.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.